Hey everyone, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm on the Wilder Network. You miss a show here, you miss quite a lot. We always try to have a great show for you. Always wonderful and knowledgeable guests right here whenever I can get them. And even if I'm flying solo, it is always, this show is always fun, it's always exciting, and it's always informative. Once again, welcome to the show. Grab your family, grab your friends, sit back and relax, and let me do all the work. Once again, welcome to the show. Have fun, everyone.
Hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that. That's a rousing introduction. I just love hearing it because it helps me through the program, actually, because it gives me that positive feeling. George, you better be good. You better be good. So I always try to play that introduction because it's not only a great introduction, it's my son who's doing it. It's a good and positive introduction, and it radiates all over me. So this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm broadcasting live from Chicago, Illinois. It's beautiful. It's light. It's bright. The sun is shining, but it is cold. This is not the spring I envisioned, but, you know, they say it's going to get better as the week progresses on into next week. So let's hope it does, because it's pretty, pretty cold. But due to daylight savings time, it is still bright, and it's a great-looking day. It's just cold here in Chicago. And I'm near the lake in my studio, and it's actually colder or cooler toward near the lake, as they always say. And when they say that, they're pretty much on the money, because that wind is blowing right off the lake right over here. So we're waiting for spring. What can I tell you? We're waiting for spring, and eventually it'll get here. It's going to come. We just have to be positive, hang in there, and wear our coats for another couple of days, and we'll be fine. Okay, that's me trying to be positive, and that's me trying to give some hope to everyone else out here who's praying for spring. I know there are some states, you know, some states around the United States, it's beautiful. It's just gorgeous, but it's around here, it's kind of cold. I mean, I think a couple of weeks ago on the radio show, I was saying that it was spring, but, you know, it changes. This weather here changes a lot. It changes. It is so unpredictable. And we can just hope for the best. But we're going to hang in there. We're going to hang in there. And it's going to get better. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. The show is just starting. I'm just on the air, and we're just starting this thing. I hope you're out there listening and participating. My call-in number is 347-857-1762. Once again, that call-in number is 347-857-1762. If you have any thoughts, you can always call in, and we'll try to get them heard. This is George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm also on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, right here. You can always catch me right here. And you can also download my podcast. You know, they're always recorded. Every radio show is recorded. And you can listen to the shows at any time at your convenience. You don't always have to listen live. You can always listen once after the show is done. I mean, because people have things they have to do, you know. And I understand that because I have things sometimes I have to do, and I can't really get to the do the show sometimes. And sometimes I can't even listen to my own broadcast and podcast because there's other things I have to do because, you know, you're a parent and your provider and stuff like that, and you have to parent and provide and take time off from the radio show here. So if you're listening, if you're not listening, you can always podcast the show, download it for later, and listen at any time your convenience. Okay? George Wilder Jr., I'm on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, I'm Google, websites, and all. I'm all over the place. As I always say, I'm all over the place, and I totally, totally enjoy what I'm doing. It's fun. And, you know, it's informative. I try to make this an informative show because I want people to chime in. And I've had people say, well, George, we don't always agree with you on this or that. But, hey, that's the gist of it. I mean, if you agreed with me on everything, it would be boring, I think. You know, I mean, to disagree means to debate it some more and come up with a solution. And that's what this show is all about. It's not just about talk. It's about coming up to solutions to important issues of our time, you know, because I don't want to be just someone who just talk. Oh, you just talk. We want to find solutions to what we're trying to do out here and to talk about. It's not just talk, but to do, you know, act on our conversation, put some action into what we're talking about. You know, the show should be geared toward that kind of a thing, you know, finding solutions to important issues of our day and of our time, you know. So on the show today is the funny and witty Dr. Sally Burbank. She will be a special guest on the George Wilder Jr. Show this evening, Saturday, starting at 6 p.m., 6:10, 3:28, 2015, Central Standard Time. Chicago time. She will be talking about her book, The Hilarious Page Turner, Patients I Will Never Forget. Please join us for that. And as always, it should be fun. I always try to make the show fun because I never want to kind of be boring, you know. So I've listened to a lot of shows that kind of were boring. I'm not going to name them, you know. So we're waiting for that. We're going to be anticipating that. Okay, so what we're going to do now is just turn the page and talk about something that's probably in the news. I'm always wanting to do something in the news because I think knowing what's going on around us and affecting us is important. You know, something you'd be surprised at some people who don't know what's going on around them or who just doesn't care about certain things that they should care about. Okay, we're going to talk about this pilot, this young co-pilot, 27 years old. He's German. I mean, I was just watching the news, and this guy deliberately flew the plane into the side of a mountain, killed these people. When he knew from reports and articles and stuff like that in the news that he knew he wasn't fit to fly. His former girlfriend has stated, and she was a flight attendant. She said that something, I'm quoting, she said that he said he was going to be something one day. He was going to be remembered for something. And he's being remembered for something, all right. I mean, this guy, to me, I mean, they're not saying it's terrorist, but to me, I mean, when you fly a plane into a mountain, deliberately fly a plane into a mountain, and murdering, killing 150 people, on my side of the scale, that's terrorism. That is straight up terrorism. I don't care what anybody say. This guy meant to do this. He could have planned this way 5 or 10 years ago. And he finally got a chance to do something reckless. And he did it. I think it's terrorism. I think it's terrorism, and the investigators are trying their best to piece all of this stuff together. The day of the crash, he was not supposed to be, according to doctor statements, he was not supposed to be on that plane. He was not supposed to be flying that plane. Can I say? I mean, this happened, and I feel so sorry for these people. I mean, my condolences go out to each and every one of those people who lost a loved one on that plane, because this guy wanted to be remembered as something. He's a killer. He's a murderer. I mean, he killed everybody on the plane, and the pilot and himself, you know. So I don't know. The world has gone mad. The world has gone mad, and we're just here. We're just surviving and just trying to get through it all. Okay, I see on the phone that I have a caller. Let me see. In her 25 years as a primary care internist, Dr. Sally Burbank has seen everything: lunatics, criminals, hypochondriacs, and even a cocker spaniel. By popular demand, she has penned a collection of humorous, inspiring true stories to forever capture these memorable encounters. The antics of the demented and dim-witted patient named Bob, who will leave you laughing out loud. And her book her book is a laugh-out-loud riot. There's no doubt about that. Okay. Dr. Sally Willard Burbank started life in a small dairy town in northern Vermont. After graduating from Texas Christian University, she completed her medical training at the University of Medicine. She now lives in Nashville, Tennessee, with her husband, Nathan, and is the proud mother of two college students. She practiced internal medicine for 25 years and penned patients I will never forget. Thanks to her inspiring and hilarious patients. She also loves to read, write, bicycle, cook, cater to the whims of her demanding and adorable silky terrier, Tiger Lily. She loves chocolate. Check out her at her webpage at www.sallywillardburbank.com. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here she is, bringing her on.
Hey, there? George, how are you tonight?
Hey, how are you doing? Great.
I'm doing splendidly. Sitting
That's
in the car.
That's wonderful.
In Columbia, Tennessee, about to go in to hear my husband perform with a Beatle tribute band called the Wanna Beatles. So he's in a Beatles band. That's his middle-aged crisis, I call it, and loving it. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. I wish him all the luck at that. And that's great. That's great. That's wonderful. Hey, how's the weather there?
You know, kind of cold, actually. It was down to 27 last night, and in the 50s today, but at least we're beginning to see some daffodils and tulips.
I don't know. It in Chicago right now, I don't know what the deal is with the weather here. I mean, it is just cold. I mean, you would think it's the start of winter instead of the start of spring.
Well, you know, my daughter thought about going to University of Chicago and interviewed there, but decided to go to American University in D.C. because it was a bit warmer than Chicago. So she wasn't sure she could stomach winters quite that cold, although it's a wonderful city in terms of all it has to offer.
Yeah, but, you know, Chicago is a beautiful town. It's a beautiful city. It's just that the weather is just fluctuates so much, you never know what's going to happen. But I always tell people, stick around, hang around. You know, summer's coming, spring's coming, you know. Eventually, it's going to get here. Hey, it's
My
great to have you on the show.
My husband did his music training at Northwestern, so he spent a year living in
Chicago. Evanston, Illinois.
You got it. He did the he was a pipe organ major, if you can imagine, getting a master's in pipe organ. So, of course, now he's in a Beatle band, so go figure.
Ah, he loves music.
Yeah, he loves all genres.
And you're
so
also...
that, there you have it.
Oh, you're
yeah,
also a music
I do.
Teacher, am I right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, I sing.
Okay,
are
you a singer?
Nothing professional. I sing in the church choir, so there you have it.
Oh, wow, you're just talented all the way around. Okay, tell us something about this great book. I mean, that's one of the things that really interested, got my eyes to going on the book was the title, Patience I Will Never Forget.
You know, when you are in practice 25 years and you see mm-hmm. all kinds of people when you're a doctor because, you know, crazy people, sick people, brilliant people, rich people, poor people, I mean, you see everything. As a doctor, especially when you're an intern and resident, because they show up in the ER. And so it is such a wonderful experience. I mean, you just see everything. And I just felt like a lot of these patients, some of their stories were very touching. Some of them inspired me. A whole lot of them were just downright funny. And
Exactly.
So I changed, of course, I had to change because of HIPAA law, the name of the patient, their occupations, anything that could let someone know who the patient is, and anyone who is living, I've got to sign consent. But so it is, it's a lighthearted book. I've got about 80 cartoons that that illustrate the stories, that go with the stories, famous quotes, and it's just everything from really funny patients, ones you wouldn't believe, to very inspiring stories. I have a couple of miracles in 25 years that you just cannot explain it medically, how it could have happened. So it's an amazing career being a physician because you see it all. And I just felt like, you know, these stories shouldn't just die with me, so to speak.
Yeah, something you can always look back on, or something, and it's documented. It's like written down there. So, okay, I want to read a 5-star review from the Amazon page of your book. Okay,
that sounds good.
I enjoyed Dr. Burbank's real life patient stories so much that I had to share the stories with my husband. He asked me to keep reading. And I ended up reading the whole book out loud to him, and we laughed so hard we cried at some of the stories, and other stories inspired and touched us deeply. Dr. Burbank writes candidly from the heart with love and good humor. The book is uplifting, highly recommended. I hope she writes more in the future.
Well, that's a good review, isn't it?
We'd be right. That sounds super. And you know what? I kind of agree. I agree with the review. I think it's great. It's a question I would like to ask. Will you be doing more things like this in the future?
I am. I have a blog, in fact, mm-hmm. called Patients We Will Never Forget. I originally started it thinking that other physicians and nurses and medical people, dentists, you know, people all around the country could share their unforgettable patient stories. So the book started as actually just me blogging individual stories. Mm-hmm. And then I spent 4 years writing and editing and perfecting the book. I've had professionally edited, of course, and, you know, professionally copy the cover. So it started as just a blog. And then I had such good feedback from people that they all said, you have to write a book. And so then what the book did was compiled it into a organized way of starting with when I first wanted to be a doctor, getting into medical school, residency, internship, and then going throughout my career. And it's sort of categorized into, you know, miraculous stories, hilarious stories, really annoying patients. So I've kind of put it into a chronological order, but also by theme. And it covers the whole gamut of what it's like to be a doctor.
And virtually you're talking about your stint in medical school.
Yes, that's, you know, some of the early stuff was obviously in medical school. So like one of my stories, it was a bit funny there, was when I was first trying to learn to draw blood, and I was just awful at it, just awful. And so I kept being told to go get blood up from these patients, and I hadn't had a successful blood draw yet. I mean, I would stick them and three or four times, and then the patients, you know, would get annoyed and ask for someone who knew what they were doing. And I mean, I didn't get a whole lot of training in it. Well, so finally I had this one patient I went in to get blood on, and my intern, I mean, my resident said, do not leave that room without getting blood. And the long and short of it is I went in there and got the blood, first successful blood draw ever, but I forgot to take the tourniquet off when I pulled the needle out, and so the blood just goes squirting all over the room, you know, lands all over the patient, dripping off the rails. And she was a real sweetheart. She made a joke about how, you know, if the medical thing didn't work out, maybe I could get a job at Yellowstone because I've perfected Old Faithful. And but that was sort of one of my more embarrassing moments being a medical student. And then one of the funny stories that people have enjoyed is when I first wanted to get into medical school, of course, I was totally broke. And I knew I needed to get to look good for the interview. I had made it through the grades and the MCATs and all of that. It passed all the criteria, and it was all boiling down to this interview. And so I decided, okay, well, I really need to look decent. And I hadn't had a haircut in a long time, and I really didn't have any money at all. I was broke. So they had this School of Cosmetology in Burlington. And I had gotten haircuts there before, and they were good. I mean, you'd pay $5, and the instructors would be right on top of the students and make sure they did a good job. And then the instructors would come in and perfect it, and you'd leave looking like you've gotten a, you know, $40 haircut. Well, unfortunately, my luck ended with this haircut, and the girl was awful, just awful. I mean, she cut it so short and uneven and butchered it. And I had to go into my medical school interview looking like my head had fallen in a corn auger. And I didn't know what I was going to do. So I finally decided I would just be honest with them and went in and told them, you know, what had happened. And but they actually liked it because they said, well, you're going to have a lot of... they said, you're going to have a lot of disappointments and, you know, disasters that happen in medical school, and you're going to have to show you can be strong. And they commented that, you know, if you can show up for a medical school interview with your hair looking like that, obviously you can handle adversity. So I joked and called that story the, the horrid haircut that got me into medical school. And but that was one experience. One of the most rememberable patients. In fact, I've had six of my stories published in Chicken Soup for the Soul. And one of the memorable ones was a patient who had a job, of all things, working for a food bunny that her sole job was peeling and slicing and chopping onions 8 hours a day.
Wow.
And she came in, as you can imagine, her eyes were bloodshot and puffy. She was crying. I mean, it was just awful. So I asked her, I said, why would you stay at this job? And she said, well, you know, I really need the money and blah, blah, blah. And so I said, I can't believe any workplace would make someone have to be in there with onions 8 hours a day. So I was mad and I, you know, left the room and said, I'm calling OSHA. And I call him up, and sure enough, this guy had had complaints before about the onion room. And he said, you know what? Onions are food. They're not a chemical. They're not a poison. They're not a toxin. He said, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, but.
And so I went in.
Yeah,
I
but they make you cry.
Yeah, you'd think. And so I said, well, why do you stay? And she said, well, my boss told me I've lasted longer than anyone else. I've made it a whole month in the onion room, and he's promised me that if a promotion comes, that he'll promote me to cabbages. And so anytime now when I'm having a really bad day, I tell myself, you know, it could be worse. You could be chopping onions.
Yeah.
And there
exactly.
are people in this world whose career goals are no higher than getting promoted to cabbages. It kind of puts your job in perspective.
Okay. Did you do your own illustrations, or did someone else do them?
No, you would not want my illustrations. I have the talent. You mentioned I have musical talent. I don't have art talent.
No.
I used a whole bunch of professional cartoons, which was actually the most expensive.
Oh,
part
you
of the
did
book.
Them yourself?
There's 80. No. A lot of them I just went online and typed in the themes of my stories, and then I had to pay the royalties to use the cartoons. And then I had 7 that I paid cartoonists who I found online to actually draw cartoons that I thought of, but I have no drawing ability. I mean, for me, a stick figure is a stretch.
Neither do I. Illustrations, drawing, I have no ability at all. But they're so perfect.
Yeah, they were. I spent a long, long time, hours and hours and hours, searching out funny cartoons. And I even sort of did tests among a bunch of people on which ones they thought were the funniest. Of course, I had to pick ones that illustrated the stories that really went with the theme of the story. Like I've got a funny one for a story about kind of a crazy patient I had, and it's got the Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs bird. He's laying on a table of the couch of a psychiatrist, and he turns to the psychiatrist and says, "Prozac is working. I'm now only mildly infatuated for Cocoa Puff." So, you know, it's just got cute cartoons that go with the stories.
Yeah, but I think they fit immensely. I think everything goes together in this book, you know, and that's why I downloaded it, purchased it, and downloaded it because I wanted it to be a part of my collection because it's a great book. Because I'm not a doctor, but I have known people in the past who were memorable people, and I have written them down in the book. I've changed their names and stuff like that, but I have written some of them are weird, strange, obnoxious, but they're there, you know. And that was my past. That was my autobiography. So
right.
I will, if whenever I want to relive that moment, I just go open up that book, you
right.
know, and
well,
relive those characters.
All right, a bit autobiographically, just because that's our worldview and our perspective. Whether you're trying to or not, we think of people we've met or characters that have impressed us.
Yeah.
And
You are not always on the same page with other medical staff on treatment or diagnosis of certain patients.
Right. Sometimes there can be ones you disagree on. I mean, there are oftentimes, some of the ones I was most proud of are ones that I would make a diagnosis that had been missed. And that requires, of course, looking over all their records and just doing a little more research. But I had a woman who, in one of my stories, came in and she was claiming she was so weak she couldn't even lift a Coke can, and you know she was laying on the bed and just acting all disabled and wanting me immediately on visit one to fill out all her federal disability forms because she wanted federal disability, and I mean she was about 30. And I just thought, nah, you know, I need to do a little more evaluation here because how do I know she's not a crock? And, well, it turns out she'd seen 6 other doctors. And, you know, I looked over all those records. It was a foot and a half high and kind of methodically ruled out everything she could have because they'd already looked for those things. But the one thing based on all of her weird symptoms that they hadn't ruled out that came to mind with my research was arsenic poisoning. And the long and short of it is I found out she'd been getting all these weird Chinese herbs and taking a whole bunch of this holistic herbal stuff. And, of course, a lot of those products are not tested by the FDA for purity, for safety, for anything. And she may well have been overusing them. And anyway, uh-huh. So I tested her, and she had arsenic poisoning. And then I had the herbs sent off, and it confirmed toxic levels of arson, of arsenic in it. But the weird thing in that case was, you know, I was proud of myself that I had clinched the diagnosis. And so when I tried to talk to them about, you know, you've got this condition, and here's what we could do to treat it and get you better, they were mad. Because when all was said and done, they wanted federal disability. And they stormed out of the office because I was saying, no, I'm not going to fill out forms, you know, to give you permanent federal disability. I want to get you better.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting case because I hadn't ever seen, you know, anything quite that challenging to diagnose. But then their reaction was just even more shocking.
Wow. Do you have an excerpt to read from the book?
I do. I have. I've been, in fact, as I was driving down here, I was reading different ones to family members to see which ones they thought were the funniest. So I'm going to read you about a patient of mine who is named Bob, and or that's
okay.
His name.
Okay. Yeah.
The book.
Yeah. I think.
And he is not the brightest bulb in the lamp store here. So I'm going to read this one. It's called "Ignorance Is Not Bliss." At every office visit, Bob embarrasses himself or my staff. When he came in for his last physical, he was handed a one-page review assistance form to complete while sitting in the waiting room. The review assistance form lists dozens of symptoms ranging from headache to constipation to ingrown toenails. The patient circles any symptoms he or she may endure so we can discuss them during the office visit. 10 minutes after receiving his form, Bob strolled up to my receptionist and said in a voice loud enough for the entire waiting room to hear, "What is impotency? I-M-P-O-T-E-N-C-Y. Yes, he even spelled it out loud for her in his booming voice.
Wow.
Lest anyone in the waiting room missed it the first time. My receptionist turned 50 shades of red before responding, "Bob, if you have to ask what it is, you probably don't have it." Not taking the hint, Bob said, "But I don't know if I have it or not. Do you know if I have impotency?" By this time, every patient in the waiting room was smirking and snickering and elbowing each other, all watching to see how my usually unflappable receptionist would handle the question. Without missing a beat, she said, "Bob, I definitely don't know, nor do I want to know." She then added, "Why don't you discuss this with Dr. Burbank privately when you're back in the exam room?" Never one to pick up on social cues, Bob began asking the patients in the waiting room if any of them knew what impotency was. Meanwhile, my receptionist dashed to the back, snatched my nurse by the scruff of the neck, and threatened bodily harm if she didn't bring Bob back to an exam room now before all the patients in the waiting room fled in droves. Once escorted back to the exam room, I explained to Bob what impotency meant. He laughed and volunteered, "Nah, I don't have that. I do just fine with ladies. Know what I mean?" Yes, he even snorted.
Yeah.
Okay, too much information. Like my receptionist, I didn't know, nor did I want to know. But then Bob added, "You know, you need to clue in that receptionist of yours and them other folks in the waiting room. None of them knew what the word meant either." So that's the end. And then the quote that goes with that is, "He fell out of the stupid tree and hit every branch on the way down."
Now, that was just one of the an excerpt from the book. And this is Dr. Sally Burbank discussing her book, Patience, I Will Never Forget. Irma Bombeck, I remember her.
Oh, I love
slightly,
Irma Bombeck.
Because I used to, when I was young, I used to go to the library and I would see so many of her paperbacks. And she was
so
something
funny.
Like a humor. Yeah, she's a humorist, but she's not with us anymore. So,
no.
But I have a feeling that she was one of your big inspirations.
She was. I loved her. In fact, I have one of her quotes in my book. She has a quote where she says, "I've exercised by women so thin that buzzards follow them to their cars."
Yeah, I remember her, and I never read her stuff, but I think I've glossed over it or just ran through some of her stuff. But she was, I think she was a newspaper reporter before she became a novelist or something like that.
Yes, yeah. Well, most of her books were humor.
Yeah, most of it was humor. And she was funny. She was very, very funny. Okay, this is great. This is wonderful. This is great. Let me see here. What would you say to those people who want to write humor but actually decide not to do it because other people tell them that they can't? You're just giving some
advice.
You
know, I hate to say it. There's a lot of things in life you can practice and get better at. I'm not sure humor is one of them, to be honest. I think some people are just naturally funny.
But you know what I heard?
Funny. I mean, it's like I think of someone like Robin Williams, and I have a feeling he was funny back in high school. I could be wrong. Maybe it's a skill people can learn, and I'm sure there are comedians.
Say,
you hear about these open, you know, comedian clubs where people get funnier.
They say
but,
humor is the hardest thing ever.
You know, supposedly it is a high source of intelligence to be able to, especially if people can think on the fly. So somebody like Robin Williams that could go into a comedy club and not a scripted thing, but he could be funny on the sly. I mean, they say, what movie was he in that he was in? But he literally would just make up.
Oh, he was in a
script.
Lot of movies.
It was a Disney one that he was in, and he was really funny.
Disney.
But he would make it up on the fly. And he was an incredible comedian. And I think it's a form of IQ that people don't always get, that when someone can just be funny off the cuff.
It's harder than just acting. Funny, being funny is you really have to be intelligent and bright to be funny. To pretend to be stupid, you got to be, you know, you're going to be intelligent and bright to do that. And I've heard many actors say that a comedy is the hardest thing for them to do in front of a camera.
To pull off well, you're right. So, you know, that one of the things I've noticed
is that
a lot of the sitcoms where they maybe have less talented people, the humor is all just the funny lines, you know, the insults back and forth. But your true talented comedic actors, it's their body language, it's their expressions. You know, they can be funny without even having to say the words. I mean, I remember seeing an I Love Lucy once where it just showed her as a pregnant woman, like 9 months pregnant, you know, just trying to get off the couch, you know, or her stuffing the bonbons in her hat and in her mouth. And, I mean, that's the most famous one is her in the chocolate factory. But you know, she wasn't saying a word in those scenes, and they were hilarious.
I saw some of those reruns,
But she was great. So I don't know. I'm not sure I know how I would instruct someone to write comedy other than, I suppose, just the response you get from people.
No, just what I meant was just writing in general. Maybe humor will, you know, seep in there some sort of way, but just writing in general.
Well, I think the biggest lessons I would say with writing is you have to avoid, you know, excessive adverbs. It means picking really active verbs, having a point where you're going. You know, what is your point? How are you going to get there? And it's a combo of characters that draw you in and make you want to read more, as well as how you write it. Do you because it's interesting. There's sometimes I've tried to read some classics as a New Year's resolution, and boy, was that a disaster. I can say is if you have insomnia, I strongly suggest you take House of the Seven Gables by Nathaniel Hawthorne out of the library. You will be asleep in 30 minutes. You know, so too much description is boring. I think now that we have TVs and things, we don't really rely on. It is better to have a couple of carefully chosen words than it is to give all this detail. And so that is one thing. But I think a lot of it is characters that draw you in and make you want to read more, coupled with just
exactly. Spells
and verbs.
Yeah, I think one of the things about your book, one of the things about your book is that you draw people in from the first page, and that's very important. You got to get people at the onset, you know, of the story.
Yeah, that is true. There's a book that just made the national bestseller list, and I almost quit it early. It's called The Girl on the Train. I mean, it's like number 3 or 2. And honestly, the first few pages, I mean, I was just, it didn't draw me in. But the only reason I kept reading is because it has all these fabulous reviews. And I'm thinking, well, all these people can't be wrong. And I just finished it today. So, you know, it does, it definitely ends and draws you in. But I remember thinking, boy, I thought the beginning was weak. And if it hadn't already made it, brought it back to the library unread. So it is true. You've really got to draw people in quickly.
Right. Quickly, or they'll lose interest.
Well, there's so many books to choose from now, and particularly where so many things, you know, people are downloading them free or getting them for 99 cents on Kindle. And so, quite frankly, if they're like me, I have a whole Kindle full of books that
I'm in.
And so they better draw me in quickly, or you know what? I'm deleting the book and going to the next book. There's no room for, you know, giving books grace anymore because there's too many other books we haven't read.
Yeah, there's too many big books out there and there's too many books to be written. Okay, tell people where they can find your book, how they can get a hold of it.
Sure. Well, probably the easiest way is Amazon. Just get on Amazon and type in Patience I Will Never Forget. It is available in Kindle, although I will say, honestly, this is probably one of the books that I think a paperback is better because there were some really cute graphics, like they had EKG signs and things that you can do in a paperback book that really weren't captured, in my opinion, as well in the Kindle. And I think the cartoons are just really fun. So honestly, I love my paperback version, but obviously so many people also have Kindles now that available on Kindle. It's available on Nook and Kobo. And of course, anyone can go into any bookstore and request it. But it's called Patience I Will Never Forget. And of course, I'm Dr. Sally Willard Burbank, like Burbank, California.
Yeah, you sure are. Okay. All right. Is there anything more you'd like to add about your book before we end this?
Just if people need a good laugh and they want to be inspired. I didn't even get into any of the stories of people who are inspirational or that really touched my life. That's the feedback I've been getting from people. That they've never read a book quite like this, that on the one hand you're laughing out loud, but then you're crying and you're touched and... because I do have the whole gamut of patients. There's some who crack me up. There's some I want to wring their necks. You know, there's others that really inspired me. And all of them made the book. So depending on whatever mood you're in, you can find it in the book.
Oh, wow. Wow. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Dr. Sally Burbank.
You bet.
And,
Thank you so much, George. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, too. I thought it was wonderful, and especially your book. I'm encouraging everybody, at the sound of my voice, to go pick this book up. You will not regret it. Thank you, Doctor, for coming on the show.
Bye-bye. Oh, and one other thing. It's only $2.98 on Kindle right now. I'm doing a markdown on it. Originally, it was $9.99 on Kindle, so it is only $2.98 now on Kindle at Amazon. And then the hardcover... the paperback's $9.99, just in case people are interested.
All right, Dr. Sally Burbank on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Thanks a lot, George.
Bye-bye.
Good talking with you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye. George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was Dr. Sally Burbank, and hopefully we will talk to her again at some time in the future. That was so great. That was so wonderful. People like that on this show have just, you know, the ratings will go up and up and up and up and up and up and up. George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show taking a break. We'll be right back. Stay with me. Hi, everybody. This is George of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I just have some things I want to say to my audience, and positive things. I want to try to keep my audience positive, upbeat, and try to make this show a fun show as long as I can, you know, have it. Be on your way to being the best you can be. Be on your way to being the best person you can be. We all got to be the best person that we can be, because of being the best person that we can be, we can bring the best out in others. Also, be on your way or my way to helping others. We got to help others. There's other people out there who are struggling, homeless, you know, hungry. We gotta do something for those people if we are privileged ourselves to do those kinds of things. Be on your way to keep writing. If writing is what you love to do, keep doing it. Don't let anybody stop you. Don't let anybody say you can't do it. If you love what you do, you keep doing it, okay? Be on your way to utilizing your God-given talent. We all have talents. We all have a talent, okay? There are some people say that no, we don't have talents. It's just exercise or practice. But we do. Everybody has a talent. We just have to get those people to dig down inside their souls and pull that talent up out of them and utilize that in a positive way. Also, be on your way to being the best parent you can be. I think I've said this before. Be on your way to being a best parent. Love you. Love your child. They will love you back. Be on your way to possess a great education and teach others. If you have a good education, teach others, okay? And also, be on your way to be a great writer. As I said before, if you're going to write, write to educate, write to educate, and write to entertain. That's what people are looking for. Sometimes they're looking for things like that to, you know.
Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Yeah, I want to thank Dr. Sally Burbank for being on my show, being on the George Wilder Jr. show. Thank you, Dr. Sally Burbank, for sharing your book, your thoughts, your humor, and your insight on how you've managed to pen such a great, great book. It's the book has a few cartoons in it, but it's not cartoonish at all. It's something like her autobiography, maybe a third of her autobiography. But it's humorous, it's fun, you know, it's readable, it's a page turner, and I would say to everyone out there, if you enjoy reading, if you want to laugh, you want to have fun, pick up this book, Patience I Will Never Forget. It's a great book. It's kind of cartoonish, but hey, it's good reading, okay? And she's such a smart and intelligent and bright lady who have, I'm pretty sure she has saved countless of lives working in the medical field. Okay, pick up that book, you know? And I want to thank Dr. Sally Burbank for being on my show, the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay, let's move on. Okay, I want to talk about politicians. I mean, and I hope nobody turns off the radio, this radio show, since Dr. Burbank is not longer on the show, but I'm pretty sure at some time in the future, she will be back and we will talk about other things. Maybe things in terms of how to keep ourselves healthy. She's a doctor, so no doubt she specializes in that field. Okay, but let's move on. Okay, whenever you hear a politician say, we're going to have tough choices, we're going to have to make the tough decisions. I know you heard that. I mean, we've all heard that. We've all heard politicians say they have to make the tough choices, the tough decisions. But there's an underlying cause to that. When they say that, they only mean that they're going to be hurting the poor, the homeless, and the middle class, because they're going to be cutting services funding from every agency there is that's incorporated with helping those people. So whenever I hear politics, I've heard Hillary Clinton say it. I've heard Obama say it. I've heard Bruce Rauner say it. He's the governor of Illinois. I've heard Rahm Emanuel say it, the tough choices. I've heard Chuy Garcia said, we're going to have to make the tough choices. And the tough choices are just, or the tough decisions are just, you know, making things worse for ordinary people. You know, I mean, we're not rich. We don't have the background that these guys have. But whenever someone says they got to make the tough choices, the tough decisions, and they say this all the time, Republicans say the same thing, it just means that they're going to be balancing their budgets on the backs of working people. That's all it means. It means it's going to cut funding from the most vulnerable people in our society, the people who needs it the most. Can you imagine people cutting funding and services from the disabled? That's unconscionable. That's just mean-spirited. You know, but they are more in line with trying to balance their budgets than they are with actually helping and nourishing people. I admit there's a lot of people out there that should not be on social programs. There's a lot of people out here that should not be on food stamps. There's a lot of people out here that should not be getting rental assistance, because basically all of this is just our tax money going to these people. But then you turn it around, there's a lot of people who are deserving of those programs. I'm just talking about the people who are misusing them, abusing them, and acting. And there's so many people out here who feel as if just because they don't have anything, that they deserve to have something, that they deserve for you to give them something because they don't have it. When I look at people who are way younger than I am, 20, 30 years younger than I am, and they're out here begging and not doing anything for their life, I don't think they should get anything. I don't think anything social. No, because that's just the way I am, and I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm an independent. I see this as, I think people should work their way up or strive to define their own way in life. You know, it's better. It's better. You'll feel better. You'll be more positive about things that are going on in life if you do for yourself and stop looking around for someone else to do it for you. Just because you don't have it, that doesn't mean you're going to get it. I mean, you're young, you're vibrant, you're strong, you're capable. Go get a job, period. You know, but I do realize there's some people out here that are out here who are struggling through no fault of their own and who just plain have bad luck. I think these people, and they have kids, I think they may be deserving of federal and social funding more so than some of these other people. You know, but even if someone has four or five children, and if they're in their 20s or their 30s, I mean, get a job. I mean, you're young, you're vibrant, you're strong. Why are you sitting at home on the couch watching TV, you know, taking care of some loser boyfriend and getting taxpayer funding for food stamps, rental assistance, and other things? It's just not fair. It's not fair. Maybe I'm looking at this as, you know, I can use my own path in life for this. I mean, I have, I'm not saying everybody can do this because everybody can't, but I do think people should be given a hand up instead of a hand out. There's nothing wrong with helping someone who has proven themselves that if they get a little bit, they're going to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and let go of the social program. You know, let go of the taxpayer-funded programs that they're now using. You know, it's not fair. It's not fair for us to pay taxes for people who are able-bodied. I mean, when I say able-bodied, strong, intelligent, smart, who just want to sit around and do nothing and figure out and say that they deserve something from the working people because they have nothing. That's crazy. You know, that's crazy. So whenever you hear politicians say, we're going to make the tough decisions, the hard choices, they're coming after the most vulnerable people in our society. That's all that means. You know, so, and I've heard it today. I mean, I have yet to vote. I live in Chicago. I have yet to vote. I'm one of those undecided. But I have yet to vote. And in the coming days, I'm going to get out here. I'm going to go do my duty because I know that people have fought to give me the right to vote. And I want to say that to a lot of people. Get out there and vote, Chicagoans. Get out there and vote. Do your duty. Do what people have fought and died for you to vote. Because the Republicans are trying to take away your right to vote. They don't want you to vote. And, you know, because they don't want you to vote because they want to keep power forever and ever and ever. you know, so they don't want you to vote. But you that should be a quest to get out there and vote because Republicans are trying to suppress the vote. But I don't know if they really suppressed the vote in November 2014. I think a reason why a lot of Republicans, and I'm reiterating this from past shows, I think a lot of Republicans are in office because people didn't vote. And people didn't vote their interests. They voted against their interests. This is why we have them, because like I said before, the rich people are the 1%. Those of us, the middle class, the poor, the homeless, we're all the 99%ers. 99% is more than 1%. How did the 1% get into office in all these governorships around this country? It's because the 99% didn't vote. When the 99% doesn't vote, that's a vote for the 1%. This is how they got into office. Two reasons. I keep reiterating this, repeating it over and over, over and over again. The reason why the Republicans are in office, because a lot of us, I voted, a lot of people did not vote. And I understand some of the reasons why some of these people did not vote. They were up, more of these people, the 99%ers, were upset with the Democrats. They were upset with the Democrats. But by being upset with the Democrats, the Republicans are controlling everything now. But you can almost blame this on the Democrats. You can go back to 2010, where Obama had the he had both houses of Congress. He had the Senate, he had the House of Representatives, and we also had the White House. Suddenly, they were bickering with each other. They were fighting with each other. They were didn't like each other. That caused the Republicans in November of 2010 to take Congress, the House of Representatives, because the Democrats were bickering. And it's the same thing that happened in 2014. People were just upset at the Democrats because the Democrats were caving in, weak, no backbone, spineless, and this is all true. They were lying. Their promises weren't kept. Obama was caving in, caving. And Obama's promise, Obama wasn't doing what people wanted him to do. And some things that he didn't do that people wanted him to do, you know. So we got Republicans in both chambers of the House. All because people didn't vote, and most of the time people didn't vote, was because they were upset at the Democrats. They said, to hell with the Democrats, to hell with politicians. They just lie and become corrupt. I'm not going to vote for them. This is how Rauner got into office, because people were upset. The 99%ers were upset at the people who were supposed to be about people, the Democrats. And this never happened. But now we got to put that all aside. We got to kind of push that to the side. We got to push it all the way to the side. We can't think about how it happened, what happened in the past. We got to think about what we're going to do future-wise. We have to think about the future. Okay? The Republicans are in office. Okay. People didn't vote. That's why they're in office. Or people voted against their interests. That's why they're in office. But now those same people who voted against their interests are seeing what their vote has garnered them. Their vote has garnered them union busting, pension cutting, Social Security privatization, no infrastructure building, cuts to this, cuts to that, cuts to Medicare, cuts to Medicaid, cuts to food stamps. This is what your vote that you didn't vote has done. You know, and you're looking at, wow, I voted for these people. I voted for them. Now they're going to cut my check. They're going to cut my Social Security check. They're not going to fund the pensions. Yeah, you voted for them. You voted against your own interest. But like I said, we have to, since all of that's done, we can't change that. But what we can change is mentality of not getting out here to vote. I mean, you got to vote in the midterms too, because it's just as important as a presidential election. The midterms, when you're electing your House of Representatives, when you're electing your United States Senators, you have to vote that way too. So you can give the president, you know, substantial backing. You know, he'll have a Congress that's got his back. I mean, this Congress in Washington now does not have President Obama's back. They're working against him in every way they can. So by you not voting 2014 election, and you claim you love Obama, by you not voting, you actually made things difficult for him. Because now he's got two chambers, two houses of Republicans, and they hate him. They hate him. But the good thing is, he's going to veto everything they try to send him, especially when it's hurting people. You know, that's a good thing. You know, I hope that's a good thing, because Obama has caved in. He's caved in the past. You know, I mean, and another thing about Obama. Obama can't wait to get out of the White House. He can't wait until his term is over. They're already looking at a house in Hawaii, from what I understand, from my reports. They're not coming back to Chicago. I don't believe that. I think the Obamas, once they're out of the White House, I believe they're either going to move to New York City or they're going to go to Hawaii. Yeah, and Michelle Obama already said that she wouldn't run for nothing. She's not going to run for anything. The Republicans have just devastated her. She's not going to run for nothing, and their kids are not going to run for anything. You know what I was thinking? After Obama is out of office, out of Washington, and he is once again a private citizen, I wonder, will we have another African-American who wants to be president? I'm talking about a Democrat, okay? I'm not talking about, of course, there's a lot of black African-Americans on the Republican side of the aisle who wants to be president, but will we have a president, an African-American president in the White House who is actually unequivocally for the people? For the people, I remember, I'm going to mention Muhammad Ali for a second here. It's all under the same umbrella. I remember when he was called the greatest. He was whooping butt left and right. He had no losses. Muhammad Ali was a hero in the black community, in the black African-American community. He was a hero. And he would get on his pedestal, whether it's on television or wherever he was, and he would demand that the criminals and the gangs in the black community put the guns down. He would demand, and he would actually go to those communities and march up and down the street. He would go to the high crime areas in this city, in Chicago, and he and his Muslim brothers would march up and down the streets in these crime-ridden areas and shout from the highest mountain to these crooks and thugs and murderers and rapists to put the guns down. Because he wasn't afraid, because he knew that they admired him. He knew that he were their criminal. He knew that he was their hero. And he was safe walking through. He felt safe walking through these crime areas. He knew they weren't going to bother him because he was the champion of the world. he was undefeated. Whenever he said he was going to knock somebody out, he knocked them out. Then he bragged about how pretty he was. They liked that. They loved it. The criminals loved that. So when he marched through the area, they would all come out and they would watch that. Go, Muhammad Ali, put the guns down. That's Muhammad Ali. Now, if you turn that around, I think Obama could have done something like that. I mean, we have all this high crime all over the United States, not just Chicago. And the weather is going to get better and the crime is going to go up. We wanted Obama so badly, and we have even asked him, went out and asked him, Obama, would you come over here to these high crime areas and tell these guys to put the guns down, stop shooting each other, stop the domestic violence, don't kill your kids, don't shoot your wife, don't kill the babies. We just wanted him to say that. Obama has said like this in the past, but he say these things from a distance. He say these things from the White House, maybe the Oval Office. We all wanted Obama to come out to these neighborhoods because he's always said that he has always said that Chicago was his home. And up to a few months ago, I was hearing that he was going to come back to Chicago once his presidency was over. Once he was no longer president, he was back here. But now, I guess they've changed their mind because I'm hearing Hawaii or even New York is where they're going to reside after he's out of office, which is a downer. I think it's a disappointment because a lot of people wanted him to come back to Chicago, but obviously he feels like it's not what he wants to do. You know, Obama is a part of the Wall Street crowd. He always has been, but we always wanted to have some sort of belief in him. The thing is, the high crime areas, Obama should. I mean, he's African American. His whole family is African American, and you know he could come to some of these high crime neighborhoods, and he probably wouldn't be touched. But I think Obama was just scared. He's just scared. Maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, I would love to see him go to some of these South Side and West Side neighborhoods, these high crime areas. I mean, he can have all the Secret Services he wants, or the Army. He can have the Army around him, a Secret Service there, you know, and get on his bully pulpit and say, put the guns down, stop the shooting, stop the killings. And I think he would have an enormous impact if he did that, but he will not, just like he refused to go to the border. You know, but he will not. I'm not criticizing Obama. I'm not bashing Obama. I'm just kind of disappointed. You know, I know there's going to be people, if they are listening to this, and I hope you are, you're going to disagree with me in some way. Maybe you agree with me. I don't know. You know, but like I said before, if he could make a difference, he could make a dent in his crime. I think Eric Holder has been out here at least once, twice maybe, but Obama, no. No, not Obama. We want to see Obama. We don't need to see anyone else out here in these neighborhoods asking, maybe even begging these guys to put the guns down, stop the killing, stop the shootings, stop the robbing, stop the incest, stop the pimping, stop the prostitution, you know. You know, we have to do that. We have to do something, you know. And, you know, who knows? I'm going to be positive and maybe he'll come out here before he's out of office, but I'm not going to hold water for that. So let me say this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I'm broadcasting from Chicago, Illinois, broadcasting live. If you don't have time to listen to this podcast, to this show, podcast it, download it. It's always recorded. And always listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's a great show. You miss a show, you miss a lot. There's always great guests on this show. I always try to get the best. If I can get the best, I want you to listen. Okay, and if anybody called in, I hope you did call in, but If I didn't get to you, thank you for calling in. And I hope you call in tomorrow. I will be on tomorrow at the same time. Look for me then. Okay, all righty. You can always look me up on Facebook. I'm on Amazon. I have a few books, e-books on Amazon. You can check those out. My number is 347-857-1762. If you want to ask me a question, call in. All right, it's great. It's always great to be with you. It is, because I always feel so energetic when I know that I have listeners out there and I know they love this show. And this show is like no other show because of the host, because of me. You know, so if you miss a show, like I said before, if you miss a show, you miss a lot. That's why I always say, make sure you podcast the show. Make sure you record it. Make sure you embed it into your website. You know, and you'll always have it. It'll always be there. This is my 58th show. This is the 58th show. Wow. I'm just moving right along. Like I said, I think this show is going to be one of the most popular shows on Block Talk Radio. The Wilder Network will be one of the most popular shows on Block Talk Radio. Just give me some time. We will get there. This is George Wilder Jr., and I'm broadcasting live from Chicago. The sun has gone down. It's getting dark, and it is cold. Just can't wait till springtime. Now, actually, it's already spring. I just can't wait for better weather. That's what I should be saying. Okay, I'm going to take a break right here. I'll be right back. Bingo. Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being there. Hello, and we have another great show today. Thank you for podcasting the show at your convenience. On this show, anything goes. That means you can talk about just about anything and everything within reason. If you have a product such as a really good and informative book or something that benefits my audience, then let me hear about it and maybe we can get you booked on this show. I'm always your host. I'm learning just like you are. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's get started. We are now on the air. Do not just listen.
Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Indiana has a new law, and most people feel that law that this guy Pence, Governor Pence, signed, I believe it was yesterday. This is 3/28/2015. Okay, so it was yesterday. It's a new law in Indiana that a lot of people feel that the law discriminate against gays. I don't know too much about it, but I'm going to look into it further, and I'll have more information about it tomorrow. Okay, it's a new law that discriminates against gays, and what I understand, this governor who signed this law, he's getting a lot of backlash from everywhere. People are talking about, you know, leaving the state. Businesses are talking about leaving the state. There's protests all over the place. So, from my understanding, it's not only a law discriminating against gays, but any group. I'm thinking African Americans, you know, women, you know, it could be anybody. And it's terrible. Charles Barkley you got him. He's a star of some sort, and he's against the law. He railed against the law. Okay, it's Indiana's new religious freedom law. He calls it unacceptable. Unacceptable. Discrimination in any form is unacceptable to me, Barkley said in a statement. You know, this is crazy. You know, I'm not on the gay bandwagon, but I'm not, you know, that's just me. I'm not against it or for them. People can be what they want to be. They can love who they want to love, you know, regardless of what I think. But I think I'm like him. I think discrimination in any form is just awful. It's just awful. But critics say the bill could have businesses a legal foothold to refuse to service to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender individuals. Okay, Barkley's remark echoed the NCAA-owned positions, which President Mark Emmert voiced Thursday in a prepared statement. The NCAA National Office and our members are deeply committed to providing an inclusive environment for all of our events, he said. We are especially concerned about how this legislation could affect our student, athletes, and employees. We will work diligently to assure student athletes competing in and visitors attending next week's men's final for Indiana are not impacted negatively by this bill. Wow, this is something. This is something. Moving forward, we intend to closely examine this bill effect as well as force. I mean, this could turn it down. You know, I mean, this really could. But leaving, refusing to visit there. This is phenomenal. This is phenomenal. So, like I said, I'm going to try to gather some more information on this. But from what I know now, it's not good for the state. Good for the state. Okay, I'm quoting here. I've never been big into politics, but I'm very disappointed in my adopted home, state of Indiana, and the passion and the passing of the Senate Bill 1. I've always been about inclusion for all. This is Barkley saying this. No matter of your skin color, gender, or sexual preferences, we're all the same people, beautiful creatures. And he goes on. Okay, that was Reggie Miller. I'm sorry. That was Reggie Miller, former basketball star. You know, a lot of the basketball stars and movie stars. Average people are against this bill that this governor signed, and they're lying, saying, well, no, it's not. It's not like that. You know, they got these people coming on television, and no, it's not. You don't know it. You ought to read the bill. But all of these people cannot be wrong, okay? They cannot be wrong, all right? We know that the Republicans, they don't like this gay stuff going around. None of them do. You know, but this Governor Pence, you know, he's getting all this flack. But believe me, a lot of the Republicans, they have his ear. They're saying, stand your ground. You know, we're behind you. The hell with what these people are saying. We're behind you. We know what's what. So the Republicans are. They're on his side. They're right there with him. You know, but I got a feeling that this is really, really going to be a bad thing for Indiana. You know, because like I said, businesses are leaving. People are leaving. I mean, everybody seems to be against the bill. You know, rich, poor, otherwise, they don't like it. And they are protesting it. They're making their voices heard. And that's what I think people should do always. Make your voices heard. Don't just sit back and talk and think and let these horrific things happen. Make your voice heard. Put some action behind what you are talking about and what you believe. And just because these guys hold these higher offices, let them know that you can throw them out on their asses at any given time. Because a lot of these guys, these Republicans who are in these governorships, they think they're king. You know, they think they're king because they have, you know, executive power or something. But they're not kings, you know. But they try to go around carrying themselves like kings, that, as if they can change anything they want, you know, do anything they want. You know, so, but we the people, we have the numbers. They don't. You know, I mean, if they do something that's horrific, we go out there, we protest, we stand in front of that, front of their homes or whatever. We shout, we scream, we curse until they reverse this crazy ass bill. And we have to vote. Like I said, forget about what happened 5 or 6 years ago. Think about what we're going to do now. We have to get people empowered. We have to get people interested. We got to get people who are excited about changing the direction of this country. Or the Republicans are going to have it and they're going to run us straight out. Because the Republicans want this country, the United States, to be nothing but millionaires and billionaires and throw the rest of us out. I got a book coming out with a premise like that. But this is reality. This is not fiction. This is reality. We have to do something. We have to get out here and vote. We cannot sit back pissed off because some politician lied, some politician went to jail, some politician broke his promise. We have to still get out here and do our jobs. If a politician doesn't do, like, I think when a politician breaks their promise, they should be kicked out of office. That should be a criteria for corruption. If you promise something once you get in the office, and all of a sudden you get in the office and you do the opposite, you should be that should be a crime. That should be part of being corrupt. It's breaking your promises. It's lying. That should be a part, in my opinion. That should be a part of, you know, you breaking your promise. You break your promise, you get you can be impeached. You know, you break your promise, you can get thrown out of the office. You know, because so many politicians lie on the campaign trail about, you know, on the campaign trail just to get your vote. Once they get your vote and get in office, they're cutting everything. They're cutting your neck off, almost literally. Okay, this is George Wilder of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm practically off the air. I hope you join me tomorrow. Tomorrow is Sunday. We should have another great show for you out there. You miss a show, you miss a lot, because I put a lot into these shows. You know, I mean, I have to prepare the shows every day. I mean, once I get off the air, I have to prepare the show for the next time. So it's fun. It's work. It's fun, but it's work. And please join me tomorrow. We're practically off the air. But remember, we have to get out there and vote. Do not sit back. Yeah, I'm pissed off at the Democrats, too. You know, but we got to find good, trustful candidates to run. You know, not the ones that who's going to, not the people who are going to lie to you, lie to us, just so they can get our votes. Like Emmanuel, I mean, there's some things he's going to tax everything once he gets in office. And we're going to be paying through the nose, you know. I mean, he's begging, he's begging to be reelected. And it's possible. It's possible. But one of the things we have to do, we have to get out there and vote. We have to utilize what other people have died and fought for us to do, and that's to vote. Regardless whether we, you know, like the candidates or not, we have to do that. And we have to choose the right candidate, you know. So I'm thinking Chuy Garcia. That's what I'm thinking, okay? Let's hope that happens on April 8th, next month. You know, so the candidates are neck and neck, and, you know, who knows, who knows, who knows. But this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. I'm pretty much off the air now, so I want to give my number out, 347-857-1762. Write it down. Use it tomorrow, all right? Okay. Thank you for being here. I hope you'll be here tomorrow. It's going to be another great show, another great show. You miss a show, you miss a lot. And for all of you who have called in, thank you for calling in, okay? We'll get to you tomorrow. All right, the show is off the air. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Oh, thank you. I thought I was gone. Sorry about that. I'm off now.
Thank you.